Hello and welcome to the Deathcast. I am your host, author, and journalist Ian Totten. I'd like to thank you for joining me as we prepare to take another look in the true crime rabbit hole. Before we get going, as always, I have the normal show notes. If you'd like to follow me on social media, just search for the Deathcast, Deathcast Pod, or Deathcast Podcast. You can find me on most social media platforms under those monikers. If you enjoy the show and like what I do and you'd like to help out, easiest thing you can do, go to your favorite podcast app, leave a 5-star review, subscribe to the show, and share it on social media. It really does help a lot to get the show out there to other people, and for those of you who have done that, I greatly appreciate it. If you're interested in getting any of the official Deathcast merch, that's stickers and t-shirts, just click on the link in the show notes. And please don't forget to visit our sponsors. They're what is making it possible for me to continue doing this show and to hopefully make it better for you, the listeners. All right, now that all of that is out of the way, get yourself something to drink, find a nice comfy chair, sit back and relax. I've got my coffee, I've got my cigarettes. Let's go into the crypt. So this week's case is a little bit different from ones we have covered in the past because it takes place in Quebec in 1963. And because of that, there isn't a lot of information on the perpetrator. We are talking about Leopold Dion, the Monster of Pont Rouge. Some of you may have heard of this particular killer. Others may not. I have come across his name in the past. However, because there isn't a lot of information out there concerning him, I never really looked into him very far. That being said, because I am researching some larger cases that take a lot more time to look into, I decided to dive into this one and see what it was I could find. Leopold Dion was born February 25th, although his year of birth is contested. Many sources state 1920, others state 1921. However, because the majority of the sources that I found listed 1920 as his year of birth, that is what we were going with. He was born in Pont Rouge, which is west of Quebec City, Quebec, Canada. As an infant, it is known that Leopold contracted tuberculosis, which led to an extended stay in the hospital. Records indicate that Leopold's parents would visit him roughly once a week, and beyond that, his only human interactions were with the Catholic nuns who worked at the hospital. By the age of 11, he had grown physically strong enough that the hospital discharged him, and Leopold was sent home, where he discovered that his parents had had another child, another boy by the name of Roland. All records indicate that Leopold and Roland quickly grew extremely close to one another. According to some sources, Leopold arrived in time for Christmas. However, just after being sent home, his parents decided to separate, with neither of them wanting to take on the responsibility of raising the boys. This led to the Dion brothers being sent to a Catholic orphanage. Now, it's unknown whether they suffered any forms of abuse at this orphanage, but being as it was the 1920s, there is a possibility that this in fact did happen, and it would explain the pair's later crimes. However, as I said, there is no definitive evidence as to whether or not this actually happened, so unfortunately we are left to speculate on that. What we don't have to speculate on, however, is the feeling of abandonment that Leopold must have felt. He's been in the hospital all these years. Finally, he's sent home only for his parents to inform him and his newly discovered brother that they don't want them. That does create abandonment issues in children and leads to a slew of psychological disorders later on in life. Over the next few years, Leopold and Roland were kept together inside of this orphanage. Eventually, though, at the age of 16, Leopold, who had grown to be quite a large man, convinced his father to take the two brothers in, which he eventually did. By all accounts, Leopold was willing to go out and work. And he got a job at a nearby rock quarry with his father, where numerous sources state Leopold pulled 12-hour shifts, and he would use this money to take care of both himself and his younger brother. However, not even a year later, on August 31st, 1937, 17-year-old Leopold was arrested for gross indecency, which, although I was unable to obtain court records, more likely than not meant that he was exposing himself to people, be that children or adults. Leopold ended up getting 4 months in prison for this. After being paroled, Leopold went back to working at the rock quarry, and it seems as though he was able to stay out of trouble for a period of time. However, in 1939, Leopold was arrested once again. While the details of the case are somewhat murky, Leopold appears to have approached a sex worker and propositioned them. And once he got this young woman away from wherever it was she was working, probably downtown Quebec City, he attempted to murder her. The woman was able to fight him off and escape, later identifying Leopold as her assailant. Leopold, obviously, is arrested. He's brought to the police station, and this is a pattern we're going to see with him. He refuses to say anything to police and is brought to trial. Unfortunately, there wasn't enough evidence to convict him of anything, and Leopold ends up being acquitted for this crime. Remember, this is 1939, and while there may have been enough evidence to convict him in 2023, 1939 standards, more often than not, they are not going to believe the word of a prostitute. And that has more to do with the mentality of the times than it does the actual evidence. After this, Leopold appears to have gone into the army at the outbreak of World War II. Some sites state that there isn't a lot of evidence concerning Leopold's time in the military, however, I have found evidence and references to him during this period of time in his life. Leopold did get into trouble for assaulting a woman, which led to his being thrown out of the army as an undesirable. He didn't spend an extended period of time in there. It appears that he was only in the army for about 9 months. However, after this, he is back out on the streets working. Leopold hooks back up with his brother. In April of 1940, Leopold and Roland approached a young woman in their small hamlet of Pont Rouge and grabbed her off the street, dragging her to a nearby stretch of train tracks, where, holding a knife and a rifle, they threatened the young woman, telling her that if she screamed or went to the police, they would kill her. At this point, the two young men brutally raped her. Afterwards, At least by numerous accounts, Leopold took the knife that he held and proceeded to stab the woman numerous times before leaving her for dead. However, the young woman was able to crawl off of the railroad tracks and eventually flagged someone down, requesting help. Very quickly, the police found the two men that she accused of having attempted to murder her, and the Dion brothers were arrested. Now, they ended up going to trial, and once again, Leopold remained tight-lipped. This time, however, they had evidence in the form of the knife, which was found with the brothers, as well as the rifle. She was able to give concise descriptions of the two assailants, as well as their names, and both Leopold and Roland were found guilty. Roland ended up getting a 10-year sentence, which he served, after which it appears as though he went straight. Leopold, on the other hand, was given a life sentence, along with lashes, meaning he was whipped by his jailers. This should be the end of Leopold Dion's story, however, it is not. As is so often the case with individuals like this, especially when we're talking about a historical case, worldwide, the criminal justice system really had no experience with repeat offenders or serial offenders. In fact, it would be decades before the term serial killer and serial rapist would be coined. So, Dion was able to kind of fly under the radar. They didn't understand that individuals like this, sexual sadists and sexual predators, were incapable of being cured because there had not been a lot of research done on these topics. Again, we're talking about the 1920s, 1930s. The prevailing thought oftentimes was that the woman had wanted what happened to her, and that the individual responsible for the crime was simply out looking for sex. They didn't understand the complexities of a sexual predator, and that sex is actually only a very small part of the reason that they do their crimes, i.e., more often than not, it also involves power. And in the case of Leopold, very well could stem from his childhood abandonment issues, and having been in the hospital for so long and unable to be raised by his parents, going put into the orphanage when he was 11. These kinds of things create issues inside of the perpetrator's head, wherein they're seeking power over others because the things that took place earlier in their life, they were powerless to stop. Leopold ended up being paroled in 1956. Upon being released, Leopold had undergone a transformation. However, this was not a transformation for the good. And as we shall see when we come back from the break, he had actually become worse. Face it, shaker bottles suck. Your protein shake always comes out clumpy and you look like an idiot using the thing. That's why I decided to ditch my shaker bottle for good and get myself a BlendJet 2 portable blender. It makes perfectly blended protein shakes in just 20 seconds. BlendJet 2 is portable, so you can blend up a smoothie at work, a protein shake at the gym, or even a margarita on the beach. It's small enough to fit in a cup holder, but powerful enough to blast through tough ingredients like ice and frozen fruit with ease. BlendJet 2 is whisper quiet, so you can make your morning smoothie without waking up the whole house. And it lasts for 15 plus blends and recharges quickly via a USB-C cord. Best of all, BlendJet 2 cleans itself. Just blend water and a drop of soap and you're good to go. So what are you waiting for? Go to blendjet.com and grab yours today. And be sure to use the promo code DECASTPOD to get 12% off your order and free 2-day shipping. No other portable blender on the market comes close to the quality, power, and innovation of the BlendJet 2. They guarantee you'll love it or your money back. Blend anytime, anywhere with the BlendJet 2 portable blender. Go to blendjet.com and use the code DECASTPOD to get 12% off your order and free 2-day shipping. Shop today and get the best deal ever. Again, that's blendjet.com and use promo code DECASTPOD at checkout. That's capital D, capital C, AST, capital POD at checkout to get 12% off and free 2-day shipping. All right, we are back. So after being paroled in 1956, Leopold Dion shifted his focus to young women and instead decided to target young men and boys. And there is a lot of confusion as to why this sudden switch. We have talked about in previous episodes how it is very rare for an individual who has a set parameter in terms of the types of victims that they target to change those parameters, change that MO, and instead go after a different target base. Leopold was one of these few rare cases. And it may be that his earlier crimes were aimed at his mother and the sense of abandonment that he felt growing up because she refused to raise him. And in fact, by all indications, after separating with his father, had nothing to do with him. The targeting of young men and boys, however, could very well be an indication that Leopold was feeling some form of self-hatred, particularly towards his younger self and his inability to stop the situations that arose in his childhood. And by that I'm talking about the tuberculosis and the stay in the hospital and then being abandoned by his parents into a orphanage. While it is not exceedingly common, you do see this kind of thing happen with an offender where they target a group that is the same gender as they are, not because they are gay, but because they feel so much rage and shame over the things that happened to them when they were a child and their inability to stop these things from happening. In their mind, they get this idea going that if they target this group, it's the same thing as killing their younger self. And I think that this is more likely than not the reason why Leopold Dion started targeting these young boys, because of the shame and rage he felt towards his younger self. Now, fairly quickly after being released in 1956, Leopold was arrested once again, this time on a parole violation for what has been termed as indecency with a minor. More likely than not, he accosted the boy in public, molested him, he may have taken him to a secluded area and sexually assaulted the child. The fact that he was arrested so quickly, however, suggests to me that whatever it was he had done, he did in public, was seen, stopped, and sent back to prison. One thing we do need to touch upon, however, is that while Leopold was sent back to prison for this offense, there were numerous other boys that he assaulted whom he just wasn't charged with assaulting. Some of these took place after he got out of prison this time, 1956. In fact, it seems as though the vast majority took place during this time frame. However, when he is eventually released again in 1962, Leopold begins assaulting children again. However, he does what so many before him have done. During this period of time, he goes through a transformation where the realization comes to him that he keeps getting caught because he's leaving the victims alive. And if he doesn't leave the victims alive, that means there's no witnesses to testify against him or to contact the police and inform them of what it was that he had done. Leopold Dion is a textbook example of a perpetrator whose crimes escalate over time. If we look back to his younger days, at first he is, you know, flashing children, possibly touching them inappropriately. He escalates this to a sexual assault and an attempted murder, ends up going into the military, has another attempted murder slash sexual assault. That case is dismissed. He gets thrown out of the military. He and his brother then duly assault this woman and attempt to murder her, which ends up sending them both to prison. Leopold gets out. He offends again. This time, when he gets out, 1963, though, his psychosis, his mania, is in full effect, which, again, you do see with individuals like him. They have evolved internally to the point where they're willing to take these extra steps in order to ensure that they do not get caught. I've read a couple of articles stating that Leopold was the type of offender where it's believed he never would have aged out of committing his crimes had he not been caught. What does that mean? Some offenders are known to have literally aged out of committing the crimes for whatever reason. They internally decide they no longer need to commit these crimes in order to feel fulfilled in life. You also have other offenders where there'll be a big enough event that takes place in their life, such as a Gary Ridgway. He gets married again. He doesn't have the time because he and this wife are always on the road doing stuff, so that they cannot find the time to go out and offend once again. More often than not, with that type of killer, the needs that murder was fulfilling for them are now being met by this other individual in their life. Oftentimes, this is power and dominance. However, with a character like Leopold, no major event was going to stop him from offending, barring being placed into prison. And that's what we see. He has a few assaults when he gets out on young children. It's known that he assaulted at least 21 children. He very quickly, however, escalates his assaults into murders. So now, after being paroled, Leopold takes on a different tactic to find his victims. He gets his hands on a camera, which he does not load with any film, and he goes out trolling, pretending to take photographs of these boys, before eventually convincing them that, hey, I'd like to take some more pictures of you. Why don't we go somewhere else where I can take these photographs? At which point, he sexually assaults them. On April 20th of 1963, a 12-year-old boy named Guy Lukanuk boarded a train in Kenegami, Quebec, headed towards Quebec City. There is some disparity with Guy. Newspaper reports of the time have it that he had actually boarded a bus with his parents to go take clarinet lessons. However, contemporary accounts have it that he boarded a train for these lessons by himself. It should be noted, though, that this was not the first trip Guy had taken by himself. In fact, he made this trip weekly. And this wasn't a short trip. By today's standards, this trip was about 134 miles from his hometown. Which may seem astonishing to many of the listeners out there, but I know for myself, when I was his age, I was routinely taking trains from New York City into New Jersey and back again. Which, while not a, you know, 2.5-3 hour trip, still for a 10, 11, 12 year old kid, that was a long ways to go without any parents overseeing you. Now, Leopold was on this train and, in fact, rode it quite often, and he often saw Guy on this train unattended. So, on this date in question, April 20th, Leopold brings his camera with him. So this particular crime was, in fact, a targeted victim. He knew the boy was on the train every week. This time out, Leopold decides to bring the camera and use the ruse he has been using on other young boys. He approaches the boy, disarms him, starts taking pictures of him with this camera that has no film in it, and eventually convinces Guy that he'd like to continue this photo session out in the country somewhere, but don't worry, I will bring you back to the train station. Perhaps he even informed him that he would drive him the rest of the way to Quebec City for his music lesson. The two of them get off the train and get into Leopold's car. Leopold then drives out into the country, where he sexually assaulted him before strangling him to death and burying his body in a shallow grave. Unfortunately, again, this is 1963, things like closed-circuit television, while in existence, were very rare. So, no one was able to really give a description. They had no video footage with which to find out what happened to Guy. Now, the police immediately ruled out the fact that Guy probably ran away. And in fact, they started a fairly intense search for the young boy. Although, barring a few witnesses who saw him with a man, they were unable to get very far. Now, there's also conflicting reports as to whether or not the conservatory actually contacted Guy's parents, stating that he missed his lesson, or whether his parents contacted the conservatory to try and find out where he was. In any event, they eventually did contact the police, who started their investigation. We also know that almost from the get-go, police suspected that a sexual predator had almost certainly targeted Guy. After this, Leopold went into a cooling-off period where it doesn't appear that he assaulted anyone. However, he eventually found himself at a place known as the Plains of Abraham in Quebec City. On May 5th, 1963, Leopold encountered 9-year-old Michelle Morel and 11-year-old Elaine Carrier. The two were playing together. Just as Leopold had done with Guy, Leopold approached them with his camera. It's very possible he had seen both or one of the boys prior to this and decided that they were going to be his next victim. So when he finds them outside playing, he approaches them with the camera, starts taking pictures of them, and convinces them to get into his car because he's going to take them for a short drive where, again, he's going to take more photographs of them. Leopold drives them to a abandoned house, which is about 20 miles outside of Quebec City, that he sometimes lived in. According to his later confessions, Leopold brought the boys up into the attic, where he convinced them to play a game that he referred to as prisoner. Sending Elaine down to his car to listen to music, Leopold then proceeded to tie Michelle to the bed. At which point, according to Leopold, he let the younger boy know what was going to happen. Michelle refused this, and according to Leopold, he began to pray, saying an act of contrition, at which point he smothered Michelle before going and finding Elaine. There's conflicting stories about this particular crime. Some sources state that he ordered the young boy to strip naked, which he did, at which point Leopold sexually assaulted and strangled him. Just quickly, I do want to point out, if you look online for this case, you're going to see a lot of accounts that state he killed Elaine first and then murdered Michelle by smothering him. I'm going off of contemporary news sources, which are taken directly from the confessions that Leopold would eventually give. As with the disappearance of Guy, the police very quickly decided that these two young boys had not run away and had more likely than not been approached by a sexual predator. They based this on eyewitness statements. We will get back to this case in just a moment. I'm on the road a lot, and it's really hard to stay properly hydrated on the road. There's so many choices between water and sports drinks, many of them filled with sugars and other chemicals that leave you feeling run down afterwards. But what if I told you there is a better solution? Liquid 4 is the category-winning hydration brand fueling your well-being, and their hydration multiplier is the one product you're missing in your daily routine. In just one stick, you get 5 essential vitamins and 2 times faster hydration than water alone. Use it first thing in the morning, before a workout, when you feel run down, after a long night out, and on a long flight. One of the things I like best about the Liquid 4 Hydration Multiplier is their delicious flavor options, such as sea berry, strawberry lemonade, Concord grape, lemon lime, pina colada, or my personal favorite, watermelon. But Liquid 4 doesn't just taste good, it's good for you. It contains 5 essential vitamins, B3, B5, B6, B12, and vitamin C. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sport drinks. But best of all, Liquid 4 is non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy, which means that anybody can enjoy it, regardless of their dietary restrictions. And now, just for listeners of my show, you can get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DECASTPOD at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code DECASTPOD. So go to liquid4, that's IV.com, and use promo code capital D, capital C, AST, capital POD at checkout to get 20% off your order. Liquid 4 Hydration. It's time to take your hydration needs to the next level. Cobra Killer, Gay Porn, Murder, and the Manhunt to Bring the Killers to Justice by Andrew E. Stoner and Peter A. Conway is the first and most detailed account of the gay porn murder that shocked a nation. Cobra Killer, featured on NBC's Snapped Killer Couples, pulls back the glitzy veil of the gay porn industry to expose a story of deceit, greed, and the ultimate betrayal. Cobra Killer,
Gay Porn, Murder, and the Manhunt to Bring the Killers to Justice tells the story of online gay porn entrepreneur Brian Kosis, whose brutal near decapitation on a Wednesday in early 2007 sent shockwaves through the small Pennsylvania town where he ran his porn empire. The basis for the Christian Slater film King Cobra, Cobra Killer has been called an addictive page-turner that you won't want to put down by the San Diego LGBT Weekly, and a grisly, gripping documentary account of the 2007 murder by Passport Magazine. Cobra Killer, Gay Porn, Murder, and the Manhunt to Bring the Killers to Justice by Andrew E. Stoner and Peter A. Conway. Available on Amazon in paperback and ebook, or at bookstores nationwide.
After this double murder, Leopold goes into another cooling off period, lasted about 2 weeks, until May 26th of 1963. He was in an area known as Wolf's Cove, which was a very popular swimming hole among boys. Now, it is known that Leopold, again posing as a photographer for a quote-unquote American magazine, approached numerous boys on this day. However, the boys all turned him down. One of them actually ran away. It was at this point that Leopold approached a 13-year-old named Pierre Marquez, and Leopold was able to convince the boy that he wanted to take pictures. He was a photographer, and he led him off to his car. One thing of note with this, though, is that a boy who had been approached, the one that ran away, actually came back and watched Leopold lead Pierre to his car. Leopold drove Pierre to an area nearby to where he had murdered Guy and ordered the young boy to take off his clothing, at which point he attempted to sexually assault Pierre. According to Leopold, Pierre fought back and eventually he ended up strangling the boy. Naturally, the police now have a string of disappearances. They're canvassing the neighborhoods, the areas, they're talking to everyone. It's unknown whether or not the young boy who witnessed Pierre being led to the car contacted the police the day of Pierre's disappearance, or if this happened after the fact, say when he saw the newspaper report that Pierre had gone missing. In any event, this boy did contact police, and he informed them of what he had seen in regards to Pierre. He was able to give a very detailed description of the man, but he was also able to give a very detailed description of the car that he saw the man bring Pierre to, and it was armed with this evidence that police began to look for any suspects that might fit these descriptions. And it was not long before the police settled on Leopold Dion as their primary suspect. Some sources state that the following day, the police went out, they arrested Leopold, they brought him into the police station for questioning, and he refused to answer any of their questions. Needing to hold him further while they investigated this, the police had the one child who had seen him and survived pick him out of a lineup. And this was on May 27th of 1963. So now Leopold is in police custody while they continue to search for these four young boys. They held him on suspicion of murder, corruption of a minor, and attempted kidnapping. The police were at a disadvantage, though, as Leopold did not have any single one residency. He pretty much drifted around doing odd jobs in the area and crashing in the woods, in abandoned homes, anywhere. On June 12th, a hunter was out in the woods when he noticed birds circling, and he went over to investigate, at which point he discovered a hand sticking out from the ground and contacted the local police. The police arrive, and they naturally cordon off the area. They dig up the body. They find that it's a young boy who's naked and lying in a fetal position. Now, armed with this, they decide to return to the police station to question Leopold about this crime as well as the other three missing children. I'm going to read an excerpt from the Owen Sound Sun-Times, dated June 13th, 1963. This is the day after Guy's body was discovered. Unfortunately, there is no author attributed to this article. Kenogami, Quebec. Even as the, quote, one boy's body is found in shallow grave in Quebec, seek three other boys' graves. The body of a boy found buried in a shallow grave in a cattle-trampled meadow was identified today as Guy Lukenquek, 12, of Kiogami, Quebec. Even as the boy's father made the identification, grim-faced detectives continued to search through woods in Portneuf County for graves of three other boys missing and feared dead. Police have said they believe the four boys who had disappeared without a trace were the victims of a homicidal sex pervert. Identification of the boy, found buried beneath 8 inches of soil Wednesday night, was made by a scar on his arm and his dental work, Inspector J.A. Matt of the Provincial Police said. The first of the boys disappeared about 1.5 months ago. The Lukenquek boy disappeared April 20th. So now, with this information, the police start questioning him, and eventually, Dion starts talking and starts admitting to his crimes. I'm going to read an article now from the North Bay Nugget that ran on July 6th, 1963. Headlined, Man Leads Police to Graves of Three Missing Quebec Lads. Quote, after a 2-month search, police have found the bodies of three Quebec City boys who they feared had been lured into the woods and slain by a sex monster. Discovery of the bodies was announced by Quebec Provincial Police at a hastily called press conference shortly before midnight Friday night. Few details were given. A QPP officer said police were led to the graves by a man they had been questioning in connection with the boys' disappearances. All three of the bodies have been identified by the parents of the missing boys, Michel Morel, 9, Elaine Carrier, 11, and Pierre Marquise, 13, and a coroner's inquest was to be held today. Police said two bodies were found buried together in the woods near an abandoned home on the outskirts of Pont Rouge, 12 miles from here. The third was found buried in a forest only about 600 feet from the clearing where the body of 13-year-old Guy Lukenbach was discovered by accident early in June. So obviously, now the police have their man. He's admitted to the crimes. He's led them to the location of them. Leopold ends up going on trial. More than that, Leopold actually testified at his own trial, trying, as it were, to gain some form of sympathy from the court, describing how, to him, the crimes were horrific, and he'd allowed each of the boys to pray before taking their lives. This is a very old tactic from individuals like Leopold Dion, wherein they attempt to paint themselves in the best light possible, i.e., they didn't want to commit these crimes, but this thing inside of them insisted that they do it, and even though they did it, they did show some compassion for their victims in the end. That's bullshit. If they had had compassion for their victims, they would have turned themselves in almost immediately afterwards. That is not what Leopold did. In fact, he went out of his way to ensure that not only would the bodies not be found, he would not be identified. More than that, however, Leopold's brother, actually testified at the trial. Again, painting this picture of his brother that was basically, he was a product of his environment, and it was not, in fact, his fault that he had committed these crimes, but rather the result of the difficult childhood that they both shared. Prosecution countered this by having a psychiatrist testify that not only was Leopold in complete control of his faculties, he also had an higher than average intelligence, and that he used this intelligence to carry out his crimes and remain undetected. Leopold ends up being convicted for the murder of Pierre Marquez on April 10th, 1964. He is actually sentenced to death by hanging. However, Leopold appeals this decision, and it's eventually commuted to a life sentence. Governor General of Canada, George Vanier. Leopold seems to have served out his sentence relatively quietly until November 17th, 1972. And now I'm going to read another article to you. This one from the Owen Sound Sun-Times, dated November 20th, 1972. Prison Death of a Convicted Killer by James Farabee. 52-year-old convicted murderer Leopold Dion, whose case provoked loud protests across the province and the country in the mid-60s, was himself murdered in prison late Friday night. Dion spent only 8 months out of prison since he was 20, but in those few months, from September 1962 to May 1963, he sexually assaulted and then murdered four young boys near Pont Rouge, 25 miles from Quebec City. He was convicted of the killing of one of the boys in late 1963 and sentenced to hang. When all appeals were exhausted, the federal cabinet commuted the sentence to life imprisonment in late 1965. The cabinet action set off a series of protests across the province and the country. One of the sharpest criticisms of the federal cabinet action came from then-Quebec Premier Jean Lesage. The Dion case put the then-newly inaugurated parole system in the country under heavy fire. The heavy-set Dion, the subject of daily taunting from fellow prisoners, was attacked as he left his cell Friday evening for exercise. According to prison officials, he was struck several times on the back and the neck with an iron bar and died in the prison. The bizarre adult life of Leopold Dion began behind bars in 1940 when he was sentenced to life imprisonment for rape. He served 22 years of the sentence before being granted parole in September 1963. In the spring of 1963, the Quebec City area was shocked by a series of apparent kidnappings of four boys ranging in age from 9 to 13. Dion told a coroner's inquest later that he picked up the boys on three separate spring weekends posing as a magazine photographer, then killed them when they refused to submit to his demands. In an extraordinary 2.5 hours of testimony to the coroner's court in July 1963, Dion described the crimes in horrific detail. In December 1963, he was convicted of the murder of one of the boys, 13-year-old Pierre Marquez, and sentenced to hang. After his conviction, Dion told the court, "These two damn hands of mine have killed four little saints. What has happened to me today is not my fault. I am 43 years old and I haven't yet lived. I killed them. I do not know why. I say it to the whole world." The man who killed Dion was an inmate by the name of Normand Champagne, who also referred to himself as Lawrence of Arabia. No, I'm not joking when I say that. Champagne suffered some pretty serious mental illness and thought that he was the reincarnation of Lawrence of Arabia. Because of this, he ended up being found not guilty by reason of insanity. All right, we have reached the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed this week's case. If you have any questions, corrections, or you'd like to recommend a case to me, please reach out at ian@corpsecreekpublishing.com. Again, please don't forget to follow the show on social media. Leave 5-star reviews wherever it is that you find your favorite podcasts. And check out all of the links in the show description. Until next week, the Deathcast is a co-production of Corpse Creek Publishing and Big Pond Podcasting. Stay morbid!